I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Coming up, we'll hear from you, our listeners, in our Back Talk conversation. But first, it's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys get a chance to wax about the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week are opinion writer and blogger Jimmy Israel, Professor Lester Spence from Johns Hopkins University, and writer Michael David Cobb Bowen. Now, we just heard from our barbershop regular, Ruben Navarrete, about the presidential debate last night, so he's already had his shape-up. I hear the guys want to talk about Vice President Dick Cheney's recent subpoena, another possible presidential bid by Ralph Nader, video games. What is the deal with men in video games? Also, was the mayor of Memphis the victim of an alleged setup with a stripper? I may jump in from time to time, but for now, take it away, Jimmy.
Hey, fellas, welcome to the shop. How we doing?
Doing good, good.
Chilling.
Hey, all right.
Chilling.
Well, okay, well, I'm feeling that. Let's hit the ground speaking on Vice President Cheney, who clearly is the gulliest cat on the hill. I mean, yeah. The Information Security Oversight Office asking for records, so of course he makes moves to whack the oversight unit altogether. Now, Lester, he's something like that D.C. Corleone, huh?
Yeah. The word gangster doesn't even begin to describe what Cheney's doing, man. And the funny thing is, well, funny depending on how you look at it, is just how people just let him get away with it. Just let him get away with it. He says, in effect, that his office is, like, outside of government.
Right, they're above the law.
They're straight up ATL. ATL. I'm just ATL. I have to come up with a gangster rap name for Cheney. I'm going to do it by the end of the show.
Kobsky, what's wrong with your boy Cheney? He's above the law now. What, he's hanging with Snoop and Dre and all them? What's up with that?
Well, you know, I will continue this metaphor because, you know, this problem began 4 years ago. This is an old issue. The National Archives is cruising down the Ave, and they're 6'4", and they're hollering at Cheney. How about those papers? How about those papers? And Cheney says, later for you. And then, you know, the National Archives say, it's like that, huh? And Cheney says, yeah, what? So a National Archives come back every time next year, and every year it's the same thing. Lots of talk, but no real legal action. This year, Congressman Waxman is riding shotgun, but he's just a scrub sitting in the passenger side of his best friend's ride trying to holler at Cheney. And this time one of Cheney's boys says, you can't even come here. And it makes headlines, but what has Waxman got? I mean, no probable cause, no grand jury, no subpoena. It's a drive-by. It's a wish hunt.
Well, Kobsky, I hear you, bro, but Lester, from where I'm sitting, you know, if there's nothing there, then how come he just doesn't come off the papers? I mean, what's really going on?
The current administration, what they're really about is this model of the imperial presidency, where they really want to keep everything on lock, where, like, the president creates the law, he's above the law, and everybody else just follows. And this is it's all along the same type of groove.
I mean, for me, it's just bad PR from the curb. I mean, because you can't be sitting up in the White House. I mean, you just can't be impervious and impugned to everything. I mean, people are calling for the Bush impeachment. You know, and then here's Cheney. You know, he's flicking the dirt off his shoulders. Like, hey, look, man, you can't touch me. And something has to give. It's just a bad message for the electorate. Now, Kobsky, as the Republican in the House, what do you say?
Well, you know, if there are high crimes and misdemeanors, then get your equivalent Ken Starr. I mean, it's all about your day in court. What can you prove? What are you really going to do about it? I mean, it's a nice thing to get out there in the press and make a lot of noise, but what's the legal case?
I don't usually agree with Mike on much about nothing except for pop culture, but he's right here. It's like, what you going to do? What? You know, I'm not going to do anything if all you're going to do is have press conferences, if all you're going to do is write editorials in the paper or have marches outside the lawn. If you've got the juice, pull the trigger.
Wow. Well, you know what? For me, check this out. Cheney's actions are just consistent with the overall dictatorial ethos of the administration. I mean, the Bush camp operates with impunity that knows no shame. And that's just right. That, I guess. You know.
That's right.
So let's talk about doctors at the American Medical Association's annual meeting concluding that video games are not addictive, and a whole nation of carpal tunneled and nearsighted kids just cheered. Now, wait a second. Cobb, I know you're a gamer, right?
I'm a serious gamer.
Do you think that video games are addictive? Do we agree with that?
You know, it really depends on who gets there first. Like, there's Major League Gaming, and they're really signing up video game athletes, and they're broadcasting stuff, and they're having big shows in Vegas. And, you know, I'm a big Halo fan, so when I see these guys and what they can do in those games, this is like pro sports for me. So if those guys get the money first, then nobody's going to say it's addictive. They're going to say it's a productive career. It could be something really good. Or you could get, you know, the psychiatrists in there, and they'll figure out how to make some money on it. And then they'll be saying, well, you know, yeah, it's an addictive personality, and maybe there's a new drug that we can give your kids to keep them off the video games.
That's an interesting twist. Lester, what do you think about virtual b-ball versus your real b-ball? What do you think about that?
Mike, what's the longest time you ever played Halo 2, like in one sitting?
I'm probably sure that I've done four hours straight.
I remember playing Final Fantasy III from 8 p.m. to like 6 a.m. straight without even knowing the time had passed.
Wow. Yeah.
It's like back at, I mean, and that's what we're talking about. You know, so he's right about the politics of psychiatry and the politics of gaming. But I don't know, what else do you call a situation where somebody is willing to play a game like Stargate for like 15 hours straight and it's
Stargate,
stealing money
though,
to play it?
Yeah, Stargate, I can see the Stargate, but that's not a complex and involving game. But these other games are really complex and involving, and you're actually talking to people online.
Hey, guys, let me bust in for just a minute. We're in the barbershop with opinion writer and blogger Jimmy Israel, Professor Lester Spence from Johns Hopkins University, and writer Michael David Cobb Bowen.
Okay, fellas, it seems like everybody here is a kind of a gamer, so this might be the wrong crowd to ask, but both all of us here are parents, too. Do any of us have any concerns about the effects of video games on our kids? Lester, you busted.
Yeah, because, you know, I got five kids. I have an argument with my wife every now and then about this, because she's like, oh, yeah, the kids, they shouldn't be, we have to do something about these video games. And it's like, okay, what, just put them in front of the TV and have them vegetate? On the other side, video games give them a chance to improve their hand-eye coordination, talk to other people, and then really engage with the TV in a way that we didn't or that our parents didn't. So to that degree, I'm all for it, but it still is an addiction. Cobb?
It's a virtual world that you go out, and I have three kids, and all of them play, you know, little different kinds of games. Boy obviously likes the more military and destructive and loud boom sounds. But the girls, you know, they play The Sims, and it's like three-dimensional Barbie in real time.
Right,
and you walk
right,
around,
right,
and it's the same kind of socialization thing. So they're still doing boy things and girl things. They're just using a different medium. But, yeah, I do
TV,
limit
Mom.
It, and they got to do their homework first. And, you know, if I tell them dad's starting the game, they got to get off.
I smoked the TV, Mom.
Can I throw something in? Since you guys were talking about your kids, you know, the Supreme Court just ruled on that school desegregation case or school integration case involving the Seattle and the Lexington school systems, and they ruled 5-4 that the schools cannot consider race as a factor in assigning kids to schools. And, you know, Jimmy and I talked about this a couple of months ago.
Right.
And I don't know. What do you think? You think this matters? Important?
I think it matters. I think, you know, as loath as I am to admit it, Ward Connerly is winning. And Ward has seen the devil in some, which I will confess, Republican activism, because he doesn't really come from the same generation of civil rights as some of his peers. But I think we are going to lose the ability to imbue race with as much meaning and subtlety as we did before. We are mixing more, and black is a less loaded term today than it was 15, 20, 30 years ago. And so in one way, it's all right because it doesn't mean as much. Race doesn't mean as much. It doesn't signify as much. But you still have to, you know, pay attention to the safety net and make sure everybody's being served by the public institutions.
Lester, you busted.
See, I'm actually here in Houston at a health disparities conference, and race predicts length of life. Race predicts the likelihood of getting sick earlier, of dying from diseases like AIDS. This ruling flies in the face of almost 40 to 50 years of racial progress. And for those of you who think that politics doesn't matter, this ruling, if no other ruling, should cause you to reconsider that. Because if we had another set of political leaders in office, these guys, Alito and Roberts, wouldn't be where they are now, and Brown versus Board basically wouldn't have been reversed like it has been today.
Wow. Okay. I'm back out. Just wondering. Thanks.
Well, you know, let me take one small exception to that. Because, you know, there are black folks that come from New England who don't eat all that salty food. And so when you talk about race correlating to health care, you actually have to talk about the cultural diet. Now, if your mom only knows how to cook pork,
hey, leave moms out of it, bro.
I didn't mean to bring moms into it, but there's diet and there's culture, and that maps onto race in terms of heart disease and healthcare.
Okay. Hold the boat. That's certainly a discussion for another day. Certainly, we start bringing people's moms into it. So you better throw a flag, but let us take a hard right and go to the home of the blues now. Now, your boy Memphis Mayor Willie Harrington is alleging that his detractors offered a stripper $150,000 to seduce him into sex and tape the encounter. Now, he's claiming it's part of a conspiracy to undermine his reelection. Some say it also could be a con by a stripper. Perish the thought, right? Cobb, do you smell COINTELPRO, or is that just me?
Well, dang, homeboy must be pretty ugly if it costs $150,000.
Yeah, that's about right.
Yeah,
that sounds about right to me.
But, I mean, does it sound far-fetched that his detractors approached this stripper and offered her money for her to catch him? What was that D.C. mayor that got caught smoking crack?
Marion Barry.
Right.
Yeah, but I don't put past anything. You know, he's been in there for a long time in Memphis, and I'm sure people are just really tired of him and they're thinking of anything they can do to get him. And you know, he's gaming that same game back. So there's some dirty pool, I'm sure, and I really wouldn't put it past him.
This is so far beyond dirty pool, man. It's a hard sell to me. Lester, what do you think?
I mean, local politics ain't no joke. I mean, people are doing types of cutthroat stuff. So I remember when Harold Ford Jr. ran for his father's seat, and his father put the word out, because there are a lot of black officials who wanted to run for that spot. He put the word out, if you run and take my boy's spot, you're dead.
Well, check this out.
And obviously he didn't mean it literally, but he meant, listen, your political career would be over. I mean, local politics is cutthroat. I wouldn't put it past.
Okay, fellas, well, here's the take-home point. Men, Chris Rock and Gerald LaVert said it best. Yo, there's nothing popping off in the champagne room. Take that loving home, brothers.
That's the bottom line, Do the right thing.
Anyway, on that note, we're going to wrap it up. Yo, it's just the three of us. I want to thank, you know, Lester, my man, for stopping in the shop.
Thanks for having me, kid. You know how I do.
Cobb Ski, that dude.
Hey, keeping it right.
Yo, and I'm just the man, Jimmy Israel. I got to kick it over to that girl, Michelle Martin.
Thank you, Jimmy. Jimmy Israel joined us from the studios of Barton Voice and Sound in Lexington, Kentucky. He writes for the opinion page of the Lexington Herald Leader. Michael David Cobb Bowen joined us from Fort Worth, Texas. He's a blogger and founder of the Conservative Brotherhood. And Dr. Lester Spence joined us from KUHF in Houston, Texas. He's an assistant professor of political science at Johns Hopkins University. We were missing Ruben this week. He'll be back next week. You can find links to all of our barbershop guests at our website, npr.org/tellmemore. Gentlemen, thanks for stopping into the shop today.
Hey, glad to be here.